Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara,
and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I want to walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope and so in the end of this heartbreak.
So what does it mean that John Bolton is out? John Bolton, right? He's a hawkish kind of a guy. What does it mean for Afghanistan that the president's getting ready to cut a deal on Afghanistan and needs Bolton out of the way because Bolton doesn't agree with him? Right? Because that was a big kerfuffle over the weekend. The president calls off the peace talks in the supposed meeting that was either going to take place or not going to take place at Camp David. Yeah. So read the tea leaves. So Bolton's out because he can't stomach the deal Trump's going to cut in Afghanistan? So that's my political analysis so far. So I guess we'll see what happens. All right, now how about this? Since I've run my mouth long enough this morning, let me just do top five. I'll do top story in Stars and Stripes, top, and then top five. All right, so I'll do this in about 5 minutes. And then you'll hear Joe Mass. Again, John Bolton's resignation, again, okay, film 11, somebody else resigned today. The president, a little bit scary, honestly. All the adults, are gone, right? And that's even if you consider Bolton an adult. But guys, I consider adults. General Dunford will be gone in 3 weeks, and then the people that I know that you looked at the president when he was elected and said he's bringing in strong people with strong convictions and that don't roll over and all those people are gone now. And in their place are B-team players. And, we have a Secretary of Defense who's never been anything really in public life. He's now the Secretary of Defense. You have Mike Pompeo, who somehow or other survived as Secretary of State. We'll see how long that continues. And again, I don't disagree with the president's, in particular, his policies towards NATO. I don't disagree with his policy towards China and the economic confrontation that the nation has to have with China. I think he's confused in Afghanistan, and I don't blame him, because the other thing I wanted to talk about that we're not going to get to today is get us out of Afghanistan without throwing the Afghan people under the bus. What do we create there? What do we create in Afghanistan that's in America's interest that doesn't throw the Afghan people under the bus? And I don't have an answer to that. I started thinking about it. Because the Taliban, they know that they cannot win that thing. So, and I had a conversation with General Dunford, and he said, look, we know that there's no military solution in Afghanistan. But I don't think the Taliban believe that. I think the Taliban believes that they'll get the United States out of the way, and then they'll have their way with Jarrah. And once the United States is out of the way, they won't come back. Now, the other thing I would say, that the fact that we're at that crossroads with, you know, with the supposedly peace talks with the Taliban done, which we all know no talks are over, okay, so at some point they'll come back. But, you know, if they think they're negotiating from a position of strength, and their assessment is the United States is running out of here, right, we'll just allow them to run out of here, then first of all, their failure to restrain, right, the killings of Americans while you're making a deal with them, to run the, to lie to them, get them out of the country, and then do whatever you want on the gamble that they won't come back, I mean, that was stupid of them. And whoever's in charge of the Taliban, if anybody is, right, I mean, because it's described as a loose confederation of organizations. That is, quote unquote, the Taliban, that operates sometimes with concert and then other times, you know, completely contrary to each other. So, anywho, what does peace that doesn't subject the Afghan people to more and more violence look like? And then again, when you begin to consider that solution, okay, in having your mind, what General Dunford told me, our policy essentially does two things. I told the president there is no military road to victory. Okay, it's got to be negotiated. What I can do, though, is I can have a presence in a nation, and I can, with our special operations units, I can fight ISIS and Al-Qaeda and make sure they don't use Afghanistan as a staging ground to do what they did on September 11th. I can do that. Second, it provides us a strategic presence in the region. Third, I can support the federal government's fight against the Taliban with trainers and supporting arms. I can do that, and we're trying to do it cheaper in terms of number of bodies and also in cost to the United States. That's what I'm trying to do. Okay, so make that a policy. Make that a policy. Is there a role for the United Nations there to keep these warring factions apart? Do we have inner Afghanistan and outer Afghanistan? Taliban, you can have the mountainous regions and all the desert and that which you own, and then inside of the circle is the federal, you know, whatever jurisdiction in which Jarrah runs, and you have the United Nations in between. I don't know. But again, what it highlights is, again, the absolute folly of the decision to expand the ground war in Afghanistan. The absolute arrogance to think that the Soviet experience did not in any way, shape, or form apply to us, because it does. And the fact that what we were seeking to create had never existed on the planet. The arrogance to think that we, as Americans, could go there and do that. I mean, and now, again, you're forced to reconcile that. What can we realistically fashion in this place? Which was the fundamental question, this should have been the fundamental question to start with, which, as you go down that rabbit hole, would lead you to conclude, yeah, we don't want to get into that business. But that wasn't the conclusion. So now you're faced with this. We can cut and run and subject the Afghan people to more and more death and violence. And there will be some that would say we should do that because, you know what, that's the only way it's ever going to get solved. They'll solve it on their own. And that's certainly one course of action. Or you can say, you know what, we have a moral responsibility because we intervene to get this thing to neutral where they're not, where people aren't dying in large numbers on a daily basis. Hopefully with cooperation of other nations, maybe including the United Nations, to leave it in some decent state without the massive loss of life. Not easy stuff, though. So, again, I wonder, is that why Bolton's out? Because Bolton is adamant that we cannot leave Afghanistan? the way the president's intending to, under the veneer of some sort of political agreement with the Taliban, to quote-unquote un-ass Afghanistan. So anyway. All right. Now, what you're going to hear next is General Mattis. Okay, now this is CBS Sunday Morning, right? This program was begun by Charles Kuralt back in the day, if you recall. And like you, they'll do stuff like a camera, like filming a stream with all natural noise. And they take you to America. All right, so on Sunday Morning, this is about it's 16 minutes and 14 seconds. General Mattis in his hometown. And I think, I know you'll find it interesting. I certainly did.
As a Marine, James Mattis was always combat ready. And as President Trump's first Secretary of Defense, he was front and center in many policy debates. This morning, in his first television interview since his resignation, Mattis reflects on his 68 eventful years with our David Martin.
James Mattis served more than 40 years in the Marines, much of it commanding troops in battle. But he almost didn't make it to boot camp.
I fell onto the ice, and I was on my way, coming down that ridgeline much faster than I ever anticipated.
It was the dead of winter, 1971, and he very nearly fell to his death from that ridge outside his hometown of Richland, Washington.
The next thing I knew, I woke up, and there was blood all over the ice.
America's enemies almost caught an early break.
Well, yeah, but I assure you that I was a pretty average Marine. There were a lot of other Marines who could have taken my place and done just as well as me.
So this now retired from the Marines and no longer Donald Trump's defense secretary, he's back where he grew up, a stone's throw from the Columbia River.
The river was a big part of our lives. Not a day in the summer went by and we wouldn't be in the river swimming it.
Hmm. What else did you do?
We'd go hunting in the fall. We'd go camping in the summer. This is heaven on earth.
And were you just free to roam as a kid?
Very much so. Very much. I started hitchhiking when I was about 13 and just kept right on going.
And ended up in jail more than once.
I'd been in a few scrapes along the way.
What kind of scrapes?
Partying too much one night underage in college and spent some time in jail. And gotten a few too many fights along the way when I was out hitchhiking around the American West.
So you got into the Marine Corps with a police record?
Yes, I did.
Along with fellow Marine Bing West, he's written an autobiography called Call Sign Chaos. That stands for Colonel Has Another Outstanding Suggestion, his staff's wry response to his frequent brainstorms.
As in, oh my God, what's he going to think up next?
That's probably a pretty apt description of how they looked at the chaos I brought.
That chaos was inflicted on the enemy beginning with the Iraqi army in the first Gulf War, which is where I first met him.
Have you been in combat?
No, I have not.
Do you worry about how you're going to react?
No, I have the easiest job in the battalion, commanding it. The men, I have no doubt about them, and they'll carry me right along. No doubt at all.
You weren't about to admit to me that you had any doubts on the eve of battle,
mm-hmm.
Did you?
We got the word that we were going to lose hundreds, killed and wounded.
Mattis was taking a force of 1,200 men into the teeth of Iraqi minefields and artillery.
I remember thinking at the time that this lieutenant colonel nobody's ever heard of has got to decide which of these Marines go first.
That's the tough part, deciding who's gonna lead the assaults.
How do you steel yourself to make those life and death decisions?
I made it clear that no commander would report to me their casualties unless they could no longer continue the fight. I'd grieve later.
In 4 days of fighting, Mattis didn't lose a single Marine. And his men rolled into Kuwait City, cheered as liberators. Victory would never again come so easily.
There's a million things that can go right or wrong. We'll see how many come out on our side.
After 9/11, he led a force of 4,000 Marines into southern Afghanistan, setting up an outpost called Rhino. It was the deepest air assault ever conducted by the Marines. But Mattis wanted to go deeper.
We were restricted by higher headquarters. We were limited in what offensive operations we could do.
Was that frustrating?
I couldn't understand the timidity and why it was taking so long.
Where was Osama bin Laden when you were at Rhino?
Osama bin Laden was still in Afghanistan.
Bin Laden was 400 miles away in the Tora Bora Mountains, and Mattis had the helicopters to get there.
We would basically block the escape routes, and then we would move up the two valleys. We were very confident that we had a good fix on him. And as we pushed up those valleys, he would have to move, and at that point we'd kill him.
It was the Bush administration's best chance to get America's worst enemy. But the order never came. We in the military missed the opportunity, Mattis writes.
You willing to say now that you could have gotten him?
You can never give that kind of certainty, but he'd have had a hell of a time getting out if we'd gotten those troops in.
Mattis left Afghanistan to take command of a Marine division in a mission he never saw coming, the invasion of Iraq.
I was somewhat flabbergasted. I didn't think Saddam could do much in terms of threatening us. There was a problem there, but I thought it could be solved other than us invading them.
Mattis's co-author, Bing West, shot this video as the Marines rumbled toward Baghdad.
Speed. We had to move quickly. Any enemy given enough time can adapt to a circumstance. If you don't keep the tempo up, then they can dig in their heels, and then you start paying more of a price.
His Marines famously toppled the statue of Saddam Hussein, but 9 months later found themselves engulfed by an insurgency.
Move it, hurry!
The enemy was rising everywhere. The tribes had gotten furious. Anyone reading a history book knows what's going to happen at this point. There's going to be violence, and we didn't have enough troops to contain it.
Mattis was in the thick of it, with 29 gunners, drivers, radio operators, and aides who moved with him around the battlefield.
And 17 of those 29 lads would be killed or wounded over the next 4 months, to give you an idea of just how bad it was. And I'm a general. I'm not in the toughest fighting.
The toughest fighting was in the terrorist stronghold of Fallujah, which Mattis was ordered to liberate. He thought it was a mistake to use so much firepower in a city of 300,000.
So you went in to Fallujah, what, against your better judgment?
You've got to do it. I mean, that's why they're called orders. They're not called likes. You don't have to like it. You were ordered to do it.
In the midst of the battle, the images of urban combat became too much for the Bush administration, and Mattis was ordered to call it off.
I could not fathom why we'd been ordered to attack in the way we were in the first place, or why we would stop deep inside the city and then pull back.
The impact of such incoherence, Mattis writes, cannot be overstated. Dizzying is the appropriate word.
How does it feel to be told, uh-oh, never mind?
You've got to have confidence that what you're doing is right. And if it's right to break the back of the terrorists, then do it. Just do it. Do it as well as you can. Protect the innocent to the degree you can. But don't get wobbly when the going gets tough.
And the Bush administration got wobbly.
Yes.
With Fallujah still in enemy hands, Mattis went into the city to confront face-to-face one of the sheikhs who backed the terrorists.
I simply made certain my carbine was laying across my lap, and I just reached down and I thumbed it over onto burst fire so that he'd hear it. And he said, "Do I look like a terrorist?" And I leaned forward at him, and I looked at him and I said, "Well, yes, as a matter of fact, you do."
Exploits like that earned Mattis a nickname.
Mad Dog.
It's not one that I've ever grown fond of, no matter how many times it's used.
Why not?
It has the idea incorporated into it of just someone who's thoughtless, someone who's simply abrasive or aggressive for aggressive sake.
This is decisive battles.
His aggressiveness is informed by a personal library that once contained 7,000 books.
Are those 7,000 books you read?
I'll bet I read about 90% of them. I wouldn't claim I read all of them, but by and large, yeah, I don't get a book unless I'm going to read it.
And underline it, as he did with the Meditations of Marcus Aurelius, the Roman emperor and Stoic philosopher.
I would carry copies of this in my rucksack when I was overseas, because if something wasn't going well, you pull that out and you say, don't feel sorry for yourself. You're not a victim. You choose the kind of way you're going to react to this.
For all his reading, Mattis can sometimes sound trigger happy. In 2005, he told an audience, "It's a lot of fun to fight. It's fun to shoot some people. I like brawling."
But it came across to most of the country mm-hmm. as sounding a little bloodthirsty.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm not tormented by saying we'll stand up for freedom.
So I remember running into you while you were still dealing with the aftermath of that.
Yes.
And you said, "It's only pressure if you feel it."
Yeah. Marcus Aurelius.
When have you felt pressure?
I put pressure on myself, but I don't feel pressure from others.
When we come back, how the man called Chaos handled pressure from two very different presidents and was fired by both of them.
You were born in what, 50?
Here's another laundry hack from Homemade Simple. Do you want ready-to-wear clothing?
It's pretty cool when you see him, right? And this is, much of this is shot at his home. And so, but it's very interesting, you know, to hear him talk about Fallujah and growing up and whatnot. This is a little bit more personal side than you normally see in many of his interviews. And he knows David Martin for a long time. So of all the interviews I've seen him do, I think this is the most personal one I've ever seen him do, which is why I wanted everybody to hear it. So there's a couple of commercials that are playing, and then hopefully we will get back to the second half of this interview with the co-author of Call Sign Chaos.
To be combat ready on the battlefield is one thing. To deal with the challenges of Washington is another. David Martin continues his conversation with former Secretary of Defense James Mattis.
Before James Mattis parted ways with President Trump, he was ousted by President Obama.
How did it end with you and the Obama administration?
Well, it ended with me leaving office early.
Mattis was a four-star general in command of all U.S. forces in the Middle East.
You were relieved of command.
I was detached early and replaced early.
So the president essentially had lost confidence in you.
I believe so. I won't speak for the president.
According to Leon Panetta, who was Secretary of Defense at the time, the Obama White House regarded Mattis as too eager for a military confrontation with Iran.
Iran had been caught plotting to assassinate Saudi Arabia's ambassador to the U.S. by blowing up this popular Georgetown restaurant. As far as Mattis was concerned, Iran had intended to commit an act of war, what would have been the worst terrorist attack on American soil since 9/11.
They're going to do it with a bomb, and so you can imagine what it would have been, what the carnage would have looked like.
I believed we had to respond forcefully, Mattis writes in his book, Call Sign Chaos. My military options would raise the cost for this attack beyond anything Iran's leaders could pay. But the Obama administration treated it simply as a crime, arresting a low-level courier and sending him to prison for 25 years. My traction inside the White House was eroding, Mattis writes. The White House was wary of my command and increasingly distrusted me. In December of 2012, he was forced into retirement.
Do you think your government service was done?
Oh, I was quite certain it was done.
But the surprise election of Donald Trump changed all that. The president-elect met Mattis only once.
All I can say is he is the real deal.
But that was enough.
I'm proud to formally announce today my intention to nominate General James Mad Dog Mattis
Did you intend to serve a full 4 years?
Of course.
You only made it halfway.
Well, that's fair, but there comes a time when you have to look at it and say, are you aligned with the person you're working with?
This is his first television interview about his resignation.
He resigned the day after the president announced that the U.S. was pulling all its troops out of Syria.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did that decision have anything to do with your...
Absolutely it did.
But what about the decision to withdraw from Syria?
I disagree with it.
Because?
Because we need to maintain enough influence there that we don't see the same thing that happened when we withdrew from Iraq.
Mattis believed a sudden pullout would undermine the campaign against ISIS and betray allies who were fighting alongside the Americans. In his resignation letter, he wrote, "My views on treating allies with respect are strongly held."
This was how I saw the strength of America, that we keep our alliances together and keep them tight. And if I wasn't the right person to do this, then the president needed someone more aligned with his views.
This is a blunt letter.
I was honest and forthright with him about where it was that I was parting ways.
Mattis had planned to stay on for 2 months, but the president decided to replace him immediately and twisted the knife by tweeting, "When President Obama ingloriously fired Jim Mattis, I gave him a second chance."
Have you ever talked to the president since?
No.
How was your last conversation with him?
It was.
As for other differences Mattis had with the president...
I will not speak ill of a sitting president. I'm not going to do it.
But he will say this.
He's an unusual president, our president is. And I think that, especially with the rabid nature of politics today, we've got to be careful. We could tear this country apart.
For about $20, you can buy a Mattis for President t-shirt, or Mad Dog if you prefer.
Hey, how's it going?
Good to see you.
Good to see you. You still look like Santa Claus, you know?
Ho, ho, ho.
The way he works a local bar...
And you're looking good.
...is as smooth as any politician.
This is my favorite place to come to see friends, you know?
Well, you've got a lot of them here.
This bar was where he used a fake ID to buy his first underage drink.
Back where I belong, you know?
He's not campaigning, but the topic comes up.
When you get ready to run, I'll help you.
Oh, Jesus, Terry. I got more people asking
you
me to do it. No, I don't.
You don't want to?
Terry, it'd be like 5-year jail sentence.
Tell exactly.
For now, Mattis is teaching at Stanford and serving on the boards of corporations and repeating to himself one of the lessons all his reading of history taught him.
You just have a role to play for a little while, so play it well, but don't let it go to your head.
That is some interesting, different look. You know, David Martin, who's known him for years, specifically chosen to present that look because General Mattis trusts him as a straight shooter and as an honorable member of the media that he won't have to deal with any bullshit. And so you get a little bit of trust involved in that interview, I guess is what I'm trying to say. All right, the other interview that I wanted to play, and this one runs about 43 minutes, so a little overtime today. But this was done with his, with the Hoover Institution where he works. And, I will include Montana Madden asked, how can I watch that? You know, it is, the video is interesting because you see pictures of Lieutenant Mattis, that I hadn't seen before. That they shot a video of the pictures in his home. You see pictures of him and his brother. There's a canoe that they rig a sail on for the Columbia River. So there's some interesting stuff. But I will post a link to that CBS video in this. So if you want to watch the video, you'll find links to both of these. Although the second one is just a sit down interview. So. But this is where he works. I wanted to play it because it's a little bit different. and a little bit more scholarly. And so here is this is from the Hoover Institution, entitled Jim Mattis on Call Sign Chaos, Learning to Lead. And I would imagine that that General Mattis had a little bit more of a hand in crafting the flow of this interview. So it's interesting. Here you go.
Enlisted in the United States Marine Corps in 1969. That is half.
Well, maybe you won't hear it. Wow. There's a message on it that says this video is no longer available due to copyright claims by Fox News Network. Well, then maybe you won't hear it. Hold on. There's always another way to skin a cat. Let me see if I can find it in a different way. Normally what somebody will do is they'll take it down and they'll put it up on YouTube. No. What the hell? I don't know if that just happened this morning. So there must be clips inside of that because the interview is in and of itself. Been up for about a week. Yeah, and I listened to part of it yesterday, so... All right. Well, you know what that means. It's 9:56. So at this point in the program, that'll do it. A little bit of potpourri this morning. A little bit of everything. Grant Newsham going to join us tomorrow, and we're going to talk about China. China back in the news. So you'll see that tomorrow. And then the Lynch and Kenny thing. And I'll pose those two questions to Tim and Jeff. One, why do you think that after all the money spent by DOD, why do you think that that number, suicide number, continues to go up? Obviously missing the target. And then two, what is the future of Afghanistan now? Talks called off, and again, the talks will be restarted. There's no doubt in my mind, but, you know, I guess the question is, and this is the question that should have been asked years ago, an enduring presence, American presence in Afghanistan, to at least guarantee the status quo, an open-ended guarantee like we made to Germany and Japan. Is that what we owe them? And it will come at the cost of some human life, Americans. Is that what we owe them for the arrogance of going in there and destabilizing their nation? The death of hundreds of thousands of people, is that what we owe them? That we owe them the lives of thousands of Americans who will go there to serve and preserve the uneasy way of life that exists there, but is certainly better than the civil war that would cost more human bloodshed. So we'll ask them both those questions. So on a Tuesday, show has been cut short. I'm kind of bummed out, honestly. Fox News. You know, the whole copyright thing, you know, is kind of interesting. It's like citing somebody's work in a book, right? So General Mattis quotes Marcus Aurelius. And let's just assume that Marcus Aurelius is still alive. Hey, you can't quote me. Well, I cited you, right? It's not like you portray the Fox video as your own, like you shot it. It's got Fox branded all over it. So, sometimes the whole copyright issue, to me, is a bit much. If your work has been recognized and footnoted, what's your point? Oh, you need our permission. Got it. All right. Have a great day. If you're just tuning in, first hour is moderately entertaining. I would say more than moderately entertaining. But central to the program today is the question of, there's a couple questions. One is, what does clear mean in weather terminology? No, not clear. I screwed it up. What does fair mean in weather terminology? So we kind of get to the bottom of that. Even though F-18 man doesn't help us very much. And Montana man, he's got some personality issues. The real question that has been in my head is millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars probably spent on mental health by the DOD. And all they get is more suicide. What's the problem? So, anyway, we talk about that. So, don't touch that dial. And then tomorrow, Grant Newsham, we'll talk about China. And then Thursday, the Lynch and Kenny event. Next week, you'll hear from Jack Riley. Another interview from a Marine, post-traumatic winner. Yeah, this one will knock your head off. Literally. You won't believe it. On a Tuesday. Have a great day. All Marine Radio. Over and out.